Welcome to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. I'm Jen Godet, your fearless host, entrepreneur, and investor and business strategist. Why are we here? Because iron sharpens iron. And when we bring industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and investors to share what's working in business, and maybe even some of what's not, we're all able to learn and grow. As a result, our businesses grow, and the ripple effect impacts not only our companies, our teams, our families, but also our communities and our world. Listen, AI is rewriting the rules of business, but here's the catch. While tech evolves faster than ever, human trust is disappearing just as quickly. Leaders who cling to old playbooks risk losing both their people and their customers. So today we're asking, what does leadership look like when the profit isn't enough and purpose and ethics must take the driver's seat? Joining me is Julie DeLuca Collins, founder of Go Confidently Services. She's a TEDx speaker, a best-selling author, and a top 50 over 50 podcaster. Julie has built her career helping female entrepreneurs and executives create sustainable businesses while staying true to their values. She's deeply passionate about equitable leadership and ethical marketing. And today she's here to show us just what modern leadership really demands. Julie, thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jen. Thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure to be here.
Julie, let's dive in. Leadership has always evolved with the times. What is the biggest shift you're seeing in today's leadership landscape, especially as tech is reshaping how we do work?
You know, one of the biggest things that I am seeing right now when it comes to the shift is uncertainty. There is no playbook, and it feels like we are in the wild, wild west of things. And unfortunately, what has worked in the past is not working right now. So for that reason, a lot of individuals are kind of looking around, looking at themselves. And I really believe that this is community conversations, what's really going to help us create that playbook.
I couldn't agree with you more. It really is about being vocal. And having the conversations and listening. So you've been vocal about equitable and ethical leadership. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about what it means in practice and where you see most leaders falling short, especially in this rapidly evolving landscape.
You know, one of the biggest things that I have found in my career is that no matter what space you are, if you are a leader, one of the most important things that you must know is you have to lead yourself and also be incredibly clear of your values, because as you're putting yourself out there, as you're letting others get to know you, like you, trust you, not only as a leader, but as an organization overall, understanding what your values, what's important, is going to be one of these things that sets you apart from others. At the same time, what I've been seeing a lot is that we are so afraid and not sure what is right and wrong, or maybe we don't want to classify ourselves as people who rock the boat. So for a lot of times, that tends to be one of the biggest challenges that I see. And in my career, at the end of the day, understanding myself, understanding my failures, where do I need help, allowed me to show up as a better leader.
You know, what you're talking about, like, you're speaking my language. It's all about self-leadership, and people, we have to model as leaders. We have to model what we want from our people. It's not any different than parenting, really. Like children, we can tell them to do something, but if we're modeling different behavior, they're going to do as we do, not as we say. So it really is important. And I want to dive a little deeper into what you just said, because I'm not afraid to rock the boat in my circles. And it's really important, I believe, and this is just what I'm starting to see, especially with the younger generations. I'm a Gen X, so by younger, I mean everything here. That's not a Gen X. but what I'm seeing is they're voting with their dollars or their currency for companies that value align to themselves. So if we're not taking a stand and we're too afraid to rock the boat and people don't know what we actually stand for from a consumer standpoint, we're losing the game. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts for those people who are like, ooh, this is a little inflammatory, or this is something that I'm not sure if I could say, should say something, when the public wants to know, like, where do you stand on this particular, pick your poison, but how do we navigate that if we traditionally don't want to rock the boat?
Yeah, you know, not rocking the boat is definitely something that individuals, we've been, I don't want to use the word, but I can't even think of another word that kind of qualifies, but we've been groomed to not rock the boat. As young individuals, especially being a Gen Xer, you just kind of had to follow the rules, right? You had to show up and do what people were saying. But the critical thinking that individuals, especially the younger generations, are doing when it comes to voting with their dollars, putting their values in the perspective, it's something that we as older individuals, as business owners, we really have to take into account. We really have to give ourselves the opportunity to say, listen, it's okay to redefine the rules. It's okay to be different, to not fit in. And that's what I think a lot of us have been afraid of, right? That we are going to stand out, but not in a positive way. But now with social media, with the ability to be connected so closely to people, it's given us the opportunity to say, you know what? Yeah, I need to stand out. I need to stand up. And it's okay to not necessarily follow the crowd. It's okay to be who I am, because that's going to give you the competitive advantage in business, but also in building relationships and being part of the communities that matter. I often tell my clients, you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea, and that's okay. Because maybe you need to be a cup of coffee, or maybe you need to be just an iced latte. And there is going to be people who want that iced latte, that cup of coffee, not just the tea. And as soon as we start to understand that and be okay with that, be okay with the rejection. You know, I read a study not too long ago that said that when we are rejected or we hear the word no, in our brain, the pain point that is activated when we actually feel physical pain is the same thing that is activated when we are rejected and feel no. So it's going to come very naturally to us to not want to rock the boat. So my challenge and what I encourage individuals to do is say, you know what? I'm human. Yes, I'm fearful. I don't know if I want to do this. But courage is something that you can do, and you can take one step at a time. It doesn't have to be all in. You have to really start to feel confident one minuscule way. And again, understand that rejection is part of the process.
You know, I really echo that sentiment a lot and on this show and in the conversations that I have with clients and with others in our space. And one of the things that's coming to me right now very clearly is we're in an AI age, and trust is everything. Mm. And leading with transparency and fierce transparency, those companies that talk about that transformation, mm-hmm. and they talk about it very clearly with their teams, and they're not sugarcoating anything, but they're really sharing what this might look like, they're the ones who are most successful, and they're the ones who are able to upskill their employees or off or have them let them go into a place where they can thrive more. So as we're moving at warp speed with these changes, what kind of ethical blind spots are you seeing? And what are your thoughts on just this this idea of sort of radical transparency as a leader through this uncertainty? Because the reality is everyone's got fear. Our CEOs are fearful.
Right, of course.
Like our investors are fearful. Everyone is fearful. But when we share that, hey, yeah, this is scary, but I'm going to be really transparent and tell you, like, this is scary for me too, and this is how I'm moving forward. How do you feel about that? Like, what are your thoughts on that? And how can we and everyone watching lead through this?
So here's a little bit of, interestingly enough, I saw something in the social media today, right? One of the founders of Ben and Jerry's, he actually stepped down and decided to step down mainly because he felt that he was not in alignment anymore. And at first I thought, oh, good for him. And then it really hit me to think like, well, people may not necessarily think it's good for him. They really might also feel that he's abandoning a brand that he created, that he committed to continuing to be a part of. Here's the thing, whether people agree with him or not, he needed to really be in alignment with what is it that he wanted to do. And that may mean even pivoting from what you committed to, but staying true to the values that you have, whether or not people that are behind you are going to follow that. for me, I really think that the conversation in an age of AI means that we need to go deeper at being authentic, being someone that is going to stand out, not because we're doing the radical, but because we're doing the thing that makes us ourselves, that makes us different. And for him, obviously, he's got such level of commitment to what he believes in, what he thinks is the right thing for him, that even though he has a lot of, sadness for leaving a company that he'd founded, but also that he felt was going to be where he stayed, he needed to really not misalign, but really step back and pivot for himself. And then those people that need him, those people that resonate, are going to stand behind him because he is showing up in the way that matters to him and matters to the people that believe the same way that he does.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That was really powerful. And for those of you listening, this is something we talk about a lot on the show. In the age of AI, it's important for us to get back to being human, to be true and authentic to ourselves, to hold our core values, because that's how we're going to move forward and lead in the new way. You've given us a clear reminder that leadership is about more than profit. It's about trust, equity, and ethics, but it doesn't stop at the boardroom. It's also how we connect ourselves, how we connect with our communities, and how we show up. After the break, we're going to dive into the human side of business, why community involvement is becoming the new differentiator, and how ethical marketing is shaping trust in a digital age. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to Power CEOs and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app for Roku and iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? You can also catch the podcast version right from our website at nowmedia.tv. From business and leadership to lifestyle and culture, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. But without further ado, in a world obsessed with clicks, conversions, and algorithms, here's the reality check. People don't buy from faceless brands. They buy from those they know, like, and trust. And trust is earned or lost every single day. Community is no longer just nice PR. It is the lifeblood of business longevity. I'm here with Julie DeLuca Collins, and we're going to dive into how do we focus on the human side of business and the importance of ethical marketing. So, Julia, let's dive in. Small businesses are always expected to do more with less, right? So talk to me a little bit about why community involvement is not just a feel-good move, but it's truly a strategic advantage today.
I think that the question is, right, going back to a lot of what the conversation has been, how do we really stand out in a crowded market? And the reality is that now it doesn't take 5-7 different marketing touch points. It really takes anywhere between 15 to 20. So standing out is going to mean that we need to gain that consumer vote. A lot of individuals are voting with their dollars. So we have to show them, why is it that we are different? Why is it that we align with what they're looking for? And really, in this world, I think truthfulness, openness is the thing that people are looking for, because we live in an Instagram age. Everything is curated. So when you have the truthfulness, that openness, but also the raw of it, brands are going to start to stand out.
Oh, I couldn't agree more with you. I like to say on this show, everybody sees the Instagram life. Let's talk about what's real. Like, business is not all sunshine and daisies. Let's just be real. So let's talk a little bit more about this, because I think trust is, it's really important, and it's becoming more and more important because we're in a tech-driven world, but we're still human. So as more of our interactions are shifting towards digital, how can leaders sort of faster achieve that deeper relationship that feels authentic and not transactional?
Yeah. You know, for me, one of the biggest things that I look at when I partner with brands or when I'm purchasing with a brand from a brand is I am looking to make sure that it's not just about the dollar or the product itself. It's about what I am seeing the brand do outside of just selling me a product. It's who are they interacting with? Are they creating practices that are sustainable? Is there a social responsibility behind what they do? And if that is the case, because that is something that is within my values, I am going to be gravitating to that brand. And I think that this is what individuals and CEOs should really be looking at as they're sitting in their boardrooms. They should be talking about, where do we want to go ahead and put our action so that it is not just about the pretty advertising, but it's about the results that we're getting outside of the boardroom with all of our people. So this is one of the things that I encourage my clients, whether it be small businesses, medium-sized businesses, look at what kind of impact you want to create, not only with your product, but with your time, with your energy, so that other people can start to say, hey, this is the brand for me because I like the work that they do. And there's so many brands that have done that very successfully already.
Absolutely. And now it's more important for us to actually talk about the social impact or the environmental impact that we're having. Yeah. But so many times founders don't want to talk about that. And it stems from, I hear things, and I really want your take on this, because the things that I hear from my coaching clients sound something like, well, if it's a give back, then we should keep it private. If we're truly having an impact or we're being philanthropic, then isn't it self-serving for us to incorporate that into our marketing? But I would say, actually, my belief is it's the opposite. How selfish are we to not let people know the impact that they're having when they use our product? So how would you advise those people who still have that belief? And it's deep rooted in me. It's from my upbringing, I know. But what would you say to that?
So one of the things for me, Jen, is that I see a lot of individuals who are so apprehensive to contribute to brands because they're not sure where their dollars are going, right? And most of us think, when I invest in this brand, and we become very jaded in some ways, we think, oh, it's just going to add to the bottom line of the board or the CEOs or the people in control and leadership of the organization. But the reality is that for me, when I see a brand investing in the community, investing in the projects that matter, then that's going to be someone who I'm really going to be gravitating on because it aligns with my values. I'll give you an example. There's actually a local chef here in Connecticut, very well known. He has been awarded many different things, has been in all those chef competitions, Bobby Flay. And the reason that I go to his restaurants and I continue to support the work that he does is not necessarily because I love his food, which I do. His restaurants are phenomenal, but I love how he gives back in the community. And I know, you know, yes, does he share it out at the top of the mountain? Not really, but the organizations who he is supporting are always happy to say thank you to, you know, Chef Tyler Perry for this and Tyler Anderson rather. So I know that for me, when I do hear that these individuals are giving back to the community and are participating in the organizations that I'm going to be participating with, that's going to be the first thing that I think of when I know I want to take someone to a good restaurant or I want to contribute to a community. I'm going to do it with the businesses that are really living and leaving a mark within the communities that they're in.
Thank you for sharing that. And I totally agree. It's actually shaped how I choose my investments, how I choose the businesses that I partner with. If they don't have some sort of an impact greater than a dollar, I'm not interested. And I have no problem with people who those are not their values and they're all about only profit, but that's just not who I am. And so I'm not able to be authentically me if I know I'm supporting something that's not aligned with who I am as an investor and as an entrepreneur. So let's talk a little bit about the ethical side of things, because I really want to hit on this too. I think it's really important. And you have spoken about the importance of ethical marketing. What does ethical look like when growth pressure is high? And what are some common red flags that CEOs should avoid?
So here's a couple of different things. And when we're talking about ethics, right? And when it comes to ethics and marketing, we want to talk about honesty, fairness, conscience, responsibility, value, honor. And these are a lot of things that we don't normally associate with businesses, but I want to change the narrative. I want individuals to think about when they're starting to put themselves out there and leverage marketing, really communicate, how are you showing up with fairness? How are you showing up with responsibility? Because number one, you are going to start to leave the pack. You're going to start to show up in ways in which resonates with people, and people are going to then vote with their dollars. What I think a lot of people get wrong, though, Jen, is when they think that, again, they need to use the formula that they were using 10, 15, 20 years ago. Even 5 years ago, the formulas for marketing is going to be very different. Ethical marketing is going to be really understanding that we have savvy consumers. We have individuals that are not necessarily, you know, the ones that grabbed the paper, opened up and saw the shiny ad, or looked at the yellow pages, and I know I'm aging myself, or looked at the yellow pages and said, I'm going to pick this one, right? They're going to go and see. They're going to look at the hashtags for this company. They're going to see who else is using this. They're going to then decide if the practices that this organization has are the practices that they want to be aligned with. I'll give you an example. There are certain airlines I don't fly with anymore. And I love to travel and I love to get a good deal, but I'm not going to travel with an organization that treats not only their employees, but also their consumers poorly. So this is something that a lot of brands need to really consider as they're doing business.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to add one thing to what you said, because it's not just our consumers, it's not just the end user and the client, but it's also about retention and attracting top talent, because top talent wants to know that they are showing up and they're working for a company that aligns with their values, and they want to feel that sense of purpose. And when they have that sense of purpose, they're more engaged and they serve in a better way as well. So I think it's even important on our internal marketing that we're making sure that our ethics, our values, the fairness, the honesty, and the transparency is all there. Because I think it goes without saying, maybe, but for those who are watching, make sure that you really dial into this and you pay attention to what Julie has been saying, what we've been talking about today, because when we lead with our values, when we lead with our impact, it's going to help us every step of the way as we grow, from the people who are going to invest with us to the people who are going to be our key personnel to our clientele. So thank you so much for this amazing eye-opening discussion. We've talked about the boardroom to the community. You have reminded us that true leadership is about leading with purpose and creating a business that people can actually trust. So for those who are watching who may want to get deeper, connect with you, or learn more about your work, Julie, how can they reach out to you?
Well, the best way to find me is on my website, which is Go Confidently Services, and Go Confidently Services or Go Confidently Coaching, whichever you choose, .com. And also I'm Julie DeLuca Collins on all of the social media platforms.
Julie, thank you so much for your insights today. I want to ask you just a 2 or 3 word takeaway for the entrepreneurs and executives listening right now. What's the one concrete step they can take this week or today to build trust with their audience?
Behavior. The best thing that you can do is really decide what it is, the identity or the way in which you want to be remembered. What is the legacy? What is the way that you want to be known for? And then create the behavior that leads to that.
Thank you so much. And you, yes, you are going to want to stick around. We are here. We have more coming after the break. Stay tuned for more conversations that challenge how we lead, grow, and build the future of business. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs, the truth behind the business. We're going to switch gears just a little bit because I want to welcome in Monica Marquez, co-founder of Flipwork and Strategic Mind in Workplace Strategy. With over 2 decades of experience in leading learning, leadership learning, inclusion initiatives, et cetera, for the likes of Google, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, Monica's not just observing the shifts that we are seeing play out. She's literally architecting the new future of work. And as you know, we all have the burning question in our mind, how do we lead through disruption when AI is rewriting the entire playbook? Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jen. Glad to be here.
Listen, leaders today are facing such change, disruption, unlike ever before. We've had tech changes in business, but it happened much more slowly than what we're seeing right now. Yes. With AI reshaping industries, many CEOs are kind of struggling to balance innovation with the human connection piece. And I know you speak a lot about psychological safety and leading through critical moments of change. So I want to ask you, when disruption hits, especially with AI, what is the very first leadership instinct that hurts more than helps in business?
So that's a really great question. And as human beings, we are naturally resistant to change, right? And so I think, you know, one of the biggest leadership things that we should not do is kind of lean into that resistance, right? Because the world of AI, as you mentioned, AI is changing work faster than people can change, right? And so part of that is, you know, people get worried about AI is going to replace me and all of these things. But the reality is AI is not replacing people. The technology itself is not replacing people, but people who leverage the technology will be replacing people. And so really this day and age of AI is about reinventing the way you do work and reinventing it alongside using AI as kind of a teammate.
And so let's talk about this because I'm a huge advocate. I do a lot of change management and partner with tech with regards to AI integrations. And we see a real lack of transparency sometimes and a lot of kind of forcing. We want this initiative as opposed to really having that open communication and discussing the fears and getting them aired open. So talk to me a little bit about the role that psychological safety plays when we as founders or executives are thinking about adopting new technology like AI.
Yeah. So the idea, like Amy Edmondson, the psychology safety, it was all about like the idea of belonging and feeling safe to kind of share your perspectives, all of these things. It's just as important in adoption of AI and technologies as it is in any kind of workplace environment. And part of the reason is because leaders, entrepreneurs, CEO, co-founders, we all have to create an environment where people feel safe to test and learn. And the thing with AI is that AI is changing so fast and AI is still so new to so many different people that no one is truly an expert on how to use AI in your specific industry, in your specific, you know, team or workflow and things like that. And so we have to create this environment and this culture of testing and learning, and leaders also kind of leading by example, saying, hey, I'm going to disrupt my muscle memory and disrupt the way that I do this workflow and ask myself, how might I do it differently leveraging AI? Because the reality is the more and more we start seeing how AI is impacting work, it's really augmenting your expertise. And so people get so afraid that AI is going to replace you, but that's not the case. What it is really saying, how can AI amplify my expertise so that I can focus in my zone of genius and focus on the strategy, the discernment, the judgment, all of these things that I need to use, and let AI do all of these automated things that waste my time.
You know, I think we're speaking the same language. People who are watching have heard this from my mouth before. I love that you're saying the same thing because I couldn't agree more. So now let's talk about calming the chaos, because when we are faced with uncertainty and change, the normal human instinct is to go into fear or to have this sort of internal chaos. So how do you calm the chaos and uncertain transitions without overpromising or stalling the new initiative? What does that look like for our leaders who are watching?
It looks like starting small, right? It's kind of that whole concept of baby steps, right? And try to identify a workflow or something, some smaller task that you can start to test the waters with AI to see, so that you can also get used to how does, what does the output look like? And what I try to tell people is think of AI, whether it's Claude, ChatGPT, Copilot, Gemini, Perplexity, whatever it is that you're using, think of it as an intern. So I love a play on words, artificial intelligence AI, artificial intern AI. And just like you would with an intern that you bring in and you say, hey, do this project for me, they hand you the work and the output. You don't just go give it to the client. You look at it, you review it, you poke holes in it, you revise it, you add your own judgment and discernment in it. And you do the same thing with AI. And so it's kind of like baby steps. Take something simple that you would give an intern and say, do this for me. And then when you see how quickly, they turn it, they give it back to you, then you kind of do the same step. So it's not anything that we haven't been doing before that you wouldn't do with some junior intern, someone brand new to the industry. You would, but this definitely is going to serve you back something that you're going to be startled and, pleasantly surprised, but again, using your discernment.
Yeah, I really like that. I've tried to shift the paradigm. We're not like, it's not just another technology. This isn't an Excel spreadsheet. We literally have to be, if we can't hand a book to a human and say, hey, this is exactly what you need to do, and then they go off and be safe and able to do a job description, then we don't have the right information for
Yes.
artificial intelligence. And so what you're saying is just that next level. It's the quality assurance, and how do we ensure that the outputs are what we want? And the thing that I think a lot of people miss is that just because we're using AI and it gives us an answer, doesn't mean we don't iterate and iterate and
Right.
iterate, whether we have our own internal systems that we've built and anchored to our own data, or we're using an open source like a Gemini or a Claude. So thank you for that. And
Yeah.
so now I wanna move a little more into the psychological safety piece of this, because one of the kickbacks that comes is if I'm too transparent, I like some jobs will be, let's just be real, some jobs will be displaced by AI because
Yes.
they're very easily automated and honestly should have been automated already.
A long time ago,
And
yes.
so there will be some displacement, but mostly we're going for amplification. And leaders say, but if I'm transparent, I'm going to lose my key personnel. Like, what does it look like? How do I actually model transparency while making the tough decisions that I have to make behind the scenes? Because the reality is, there are some job roles that are no longer going to be done by humans.
Yes.
So how do you approach that?
I think that's a really great question, especially around the idea that, the transparency, people need to be transparent because people need to know, like you say, it's inevitable. Work is changing, jobs are changing, and the job that you have, you may not be doing that job anymore, but it doesn't mean that you won't be doing some other job, right? And it would just be a little bit like if we look at some sort of assembly line that you might have had somebody, doing some small task at the very beginning that could be automated by robots or AI or whatever it might be. But then you move that person to another part of the assembly line where it's going to have much more complex kind of human, intervention that needs to happen. And so really getting people to understand that, like, yes, work is going to change. The way you do work today is not going to look like the way work that you do tomorrow, and you're going to evolve, right? And the beautiful thing that I like to say about, AI is AI can help you reinvent yourself. And even asking AI, like, how might I do my job differently? And where is the high value work that I could really focus on? And how do I start to make sure I evolve that part of it, right? The perspective that I bring, the lived experience that I bring, and really that area of expertise that, no AI is going to be able to, manage client relationships or, really be able to discern, bring in the discernment, the judgment, the empathy. So there's so much around the human, around creativity and all of that that cannot be replaced. So I would be transparent with them and saying, like, listen, we are all going to change the way we work, even myself as a leader. And these are the things that this is how I'm using AI. And this is how I'm getting AI to focus on the $10 problem so I can focus on the $10,000 problem. And so I need you all to do the same thing. Where do you find your most high value work is? And how do we use AI to help us let you do more of that high value work?
And so we started this on psychological safety, and we started this on entirely having a culture of innovation where we can test and learn and grow. Mm-hmm. What does that message look like in today's world?
I think it's the same in the way that we are always talking about test, learn, and grow. I really think that the winners in this whole kind of AI disruption world are going to be the learners, the people who learn how to learn really quickly and can unlearn really quickly. I think the superpower is unlearning, because we're creatures of habit and we do things a certain way. But because AI is changing things so fast, we have to learn how to unlearn the way we were doing things and relearn how to do them differently with AI as kind of this, you know, artificial teammate that's with you all the time. And so the idea is that, you know, testing and learning is the only way you're going to be able to get used to and learning the idiosyncrasies that you have to, you know, to work with AI, the prompting. You realize how you can give it a very simple prompt and you get some sort of output. But if you are meticulous and very thorough and give it a job and you know, and are asking for exactly what you want, you get better output. So it's a little bit of that idea of you've got to really get to know the tool in order to do better. And so giving yourself permission to test and learn and giving yourself permission to say, I'm going to get work slop at some point. Yep. And how do I fix it?
Absolutely. And I think that's our big takeaway, folks. The people who are going to win are the people who are able to learn quickly. So learn how to learn and learn how to unlearn. After the break, we are going to dig deeper into how to future-proof your workplace by elevating the human side of leadership in an AI world. You won't want to miss it. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Power CEOs. If you're just tuning in, you're going to want to go to nowmedia.tv to catch the beginning of today's amazing episode. You can also download our app on Roku and iOS so that you can catch our show and any other show anytime, anywhere, in any format. But right now, we are going to dive back in with Monica Marquez, co-founder of Flipwork and workplace strategist, to explore the mindset shift that is happening or has to happen right now, how we lead teams that are augmented by AI, not threatened by it. Because the real win isn't just in automation, it's in the liberation and freeing us as humans to focus on the zone of genius, the 4% of work that drives 96% of our impact. So Monica, what are some of the biggest myths that leaders are still believing about AI's impact on human capital?
I think the biggest myth is that, you know, people are still hung up or they fear that the AI is hallucinating or is wrong and all of these things. And I think, you know, because AI is learning so fast that it's kind of corrected a lot of those things. And at the end of the day, that's where the human discernment comes in to really be able to kind of like look at it sideways and say, I don't think that output, like, let me keep, you know, tweaking and learning. That's one of them. The other is, you know, that I'm seeing a little bit more and more is this fear of people embracing AI because AI is going to make them stop thinking or stop being creative. And we have seen some of that where people are saying, I'm getting work slopped. You know, people are using AI and giving me this output that just is horrible. And so I think that's where we have to start getting the human to understand and really kind of almost reimagine work of, yes, this is kind of the first draft to react to, but you still have to polish, finesse it, make it your own, and bring in kind of the taste. And so what I try to tell people is, again, play on words of AI, artificial intelligence, you have to make it your authentic intelligence. How do you take the intelligence that AI spits out to you, and how do you authenticate it to yourself, to your expertise, bringing in your discernment and your taste, you know, your perspectives and the way that the tone and everything that you bring to the table, how do you make it authentic to yourself so that you're bringing a unique piece of work?
And so as we think about this authenticity and bringing this authentic self into our work, leveraging the tool for sort of the rote part of the job,
mm-hmm.
what skills are now becoming non-negotiable for modern leaders and their teams? I mean, we've talked about learning how to learn, and that mm-hmm. is, of course, one of them. But what other skills are you finding are now non-negotiable, both for leaders and their teams?
I think the word that comes to mind is adaptability, of learning how to be so much more agile and adaptive and being able to say, well, we did it this way yesterday, but there's been an update, there's a new tool, there's something new that's been kind of like, you know, brought into the mix. We need to be comfortable with saying, how do we pivot as well, you know, as quickly as possible? Because we're, like we mentioned, we tend to move really, really slow. And the problem is that, you know, if we continue to move slowly, you're going to get outpaced by somebody else who is going to be leveraging the AI. And so my biggest fear isn't AI replacing me. My biggest fear is that somebody else is going to use AI better, faster than I do and replace me because I'm being slow. And so what we like to say here at Flipwork, and you know, my partner at Flipwork loves to always say, it's no longer survival of the fittest, it's survival of the fastest. Who is going to learn the fastest, change the fastest, and adapt the fastest? So adaptability is kind of going to be table stakes for everybody.
Yeah, I'd like to get you to weigh in on this. I mean, I believe that anyone who's not leveraging these tools by this time next year are going to find themselves with a sinking ship, if not already a sunk ship, because across every industry I've seen integrations and the operational efficiency, it doesn't lie. I mean, the results don't lie. Yeah. So what do you see the cost of not integrating these tools thoughtfully into daily work today to be for those who are watching? Because there are still some CEOs whose heads are in the sand and they're like, nope, this isn't going to impact me. So
yes.
Share what you think the cost of not integrating these tools thoughtfully into work is going to look like.
I mean, the cost is that you are going to become insignificant and disappear. I mean, it's a little bit like you probably know this, the story like Blockbuster, right? Blockbuster did not believe in the whole Netflix streaming, you know, all of these things where if I remember the story correctly, like Netflix and then even went to Blockbuster and said, hey, acquire us. This is where the future is going. And Blockbuster was like, no, people want to come in and get the hard, you know, tape and take it home and things like that. Well, Blockbuster doesn't exist anymore because they did not evolve. They did not see the writing on the wall. And so the same thing is happening with AI. If you aren't embracing the AI and the change and really trying to evolve and upskill your people and your workflows and the way that you do work, then you may become Blockbuster and there might just be a Blockbuster museum store left, you know, that you know you have fond memories of.
Yeah. So on that, let's talk about how leaders can use AI to reveal the bottlenecks and reallocate the human capital, the human energy more strategically. Like, how do we find the 1 to 2 high leverage ways to use AI that's going to boost our performance and then allow us to reallocate our talent in a way that will just bend the growth curve, have us really optimized in the future?
You know, that's a really smart way of looking at it, because a lot of people think about companies, and some companies are, right? Some companies are saying, oh, I can reduce headcount and bring in all this AI. But others who are really smart are saying, how might I repot my talent in other kind of key strategic places and leverage the AI to do, you know, different work? Because if the reality is that you might be paying somebody $100 an hour and they're doing a $10 task. And so how might you get AI to do the $10 task and make sure that these people who you're paying $100 are doing tasks that are worth that or more? And so that's the idea of like, how do you step back and take a look at your workflows, take a look at a really simple workflow and say, how long does it take us to do an analysis of this report? You know, how much research? It might take us 15 hours of people going and pulling research and doing things and all of this. And at the end of the day, it takes them about 14 hours to do all of that. And then they do an hour where they actually use their discernment and all of this type of stuff. Now you might use AI to pull all the research for you. It spits it out in 15 seconds. And now you have people who can spend 3 hours on making sure that they even make it better quality, higher impact reports, things like that. And then you can say, okay, now we have 14, 13 more hours, we could probably spit out another 12 reports instead of one report. So really thinking about using tests like that of how long does it take us to do this report without AI, and let somebody else, let, you know, a team of a part of my team do it with AI, and let's compare and contrast. How long did it take them? How long did it take them? Which report is better? You know, and at the end of the day, you might say, well, the reports from a quality perspective are exactly the same, but it took these guys an hour and a half and it took these 15 hours. So you start to kind of, you do these kind of tests where then the evidence creates confidence and trust of like, oh, we see where AI is actually augmenting and helping us. And so start small, start like with a controlled group on your team and say, with this project, we're going to do it this way. And if you're having people, like you said, who are staunch, like, nope, not going to do it, then say, okay, you be my control group to do it without. And this group's going to do it with, and we're going to see at the end what, you know, what outcomes are better.
Absolutely. And then the fun thing that I have witnessed over time is those skeptics, when they see how much faster people are putting the same output together, they'll either get on the bus or they realize that they're out of their league and they will find something on their own. And so yes, it's been a really nice way to sort through some of those legacy members. Well, right. Monica, this has been amazing. And unfortunately, we are getting close to the end of our segment. So thank you for helping us rewire what it means to lead in the age of AI. How can those watching learn more from you? How can they reach out to you or follow your insights?
Certainly. Well, you can always follow me on LinkedIn, just The Monica Marquez. I have a website called themonicamarquez.com, and I have a newsletter that goes out weekly, and it's called IIIAI. For those people who hear the word AI and you think, oh my God, what am I going to do? But it's a quick 5-minute read every week that kind of gives you ideas, trends of going in AI, but we also give you prompts, tools, and ways of thinking of how to use AI in your everyday work.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your expertise today, Monica.
Thank you so much, Jen. I appreciate it.
And you, yes, you, I am talking to you because all good things must come to an end, including this show. But you know as well as I do that nothing changes if we don't take action. You have heard from a couple of amazing experts today. Your challenge, if you do so choose to accept it, is to pick one thing that you heard today. I don't care what it is, but one thing you heard today and put it into action. We are going to implement it right now, not tomorrow, not next week, because then we've just become another show where we've heard cool things and not moved forward. So I want you to put that into action right now, because it's those small daily habits of success that create the forward momentum that are going to grow our businesses and help us to maximize the impact that we wish to have in the world. Without further ado, be sure to reach out to Monica, sign up for her newsletter. But we will be here same time, same station next week. So until then, win today, win the week, and I'll see you next time.